Welcome to Try Not to Blink. Today's show is going to review why excellent customer service is essential to a great relationship with your contact lens manufacturer. Then we will continue our series of eye care resolution solutions, where we have invited Lauren Williams, certified financial planner and true girl boss when it comes to finances. She's going to break down how managing finances doesn't have to be hard. It can be solved with small, vanilla decisions. And she'll also discuss some of the most expensive mistakes many of us make in our financial planning journey.
There it is, the big bad B word. That is exactly what you need to be thinking about. If you don't have a budget, you shouldn't be buying a house. If you haven't looked at your monthly expenses to say, like, what do I actually have coming in and what's going out? And what am I doing on a regular basis above and beyond just saying that I want a house or I want to save for a down payment? You have to understand what your expenses look like. 30% of my income is going to, you know, going outside to play. 20% of my income is going to savings. 50% of my income is going to just keeping a roof over my head and keeping, like, you know, the basic bills met. You know, they call it the 50-30-20 rule.
We'd like to thank the amazing people at Valley Contacts who have made this podcast possible, makers of stellar gas permeable lenses and the incredible custom stable scleral lens. I'm your host, Roya Habibi, and joining me is Sheila Morrison. Let's do this, Sheila.
Hey, Roya.
Let's do this.
How are you today?
I'm good. You know, I'm good.
How are you today?
But I'm like, I feel like I'm running with all engines on. Like, I feel like, can't we get a little break? Today we had such a...
Is that just aftermath of the holidays? Clinics wild?
I took a week off. I went and visited family, which is great. But it also, like, you know, it's never a vacation. Any vacation is never a vacation. So...
Never.
And then getting back, it's like, I need an assistant or something. I need someone to give me a list of what to do all the time. Cause I feel like I'm like, I'll do that for sure. But if I don't write it down, I don't do it. Or when someone says, hey, can you do this for me really quick? My dad was like, hey, can you order me a box of contacts for the right eye? I was like, yes. And then I forgot for a week. You know what I mean? Like, and then I feel like such a jerk.
Call my office.
Right. I'm like, can you WhatsApp my office?
You please. It'd probably go better for you.
Yeah.
So do you do lists on paper where you write a piece of paper down, like with a, like, pen and paper, or do you keep anything in your phone? How do you keep track of your life?
You know what I do is at our office, we use Trello. Trello is a task management software, and it's a game changer. I highly recommend it. I'm going to link it in the show notes because I love it so much. We are not sponsored, but we should be because I'll talk about it for years on end. Basically, Trello, you can create, like, at Trello, we have, well, not at Trello, on our Trello, we have an office Trello, multiple.
Sounds
actually.
Like you're like a rep for Trello.
I know. So we have an office task list. Imagine it's like a huge pin board, and then there's multiple ones within multiple boards within the big board, right? So, like, I have one single list checklist. Within the checklist, you can put multiple little lists with checklists within them, if you will. So I might put on my list that I need to write an article and I need to order new stock lenses and I need to do, you know, all the individual tasks that I need to do. Patrick can add something to my list. I need to talk to you about this pitch deck. You know, Dr. Fabi can say, I want to review this paper with you. So I know everything I have to do throughout the day. And then I might make a specific today's to-do list of things I'm going to specifically make sure I get done. And I love a checklist. I don't know about you, but, like, I really feel sometimes I put things down that, like, I've already
accomplished.
Done. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then you just check it off right away.
Yes. Yep. I'm like, oof, done.
Productive today. Yeah. Love it. Hey, I'm on the website now. Do you pay for, like, is there, like, a free version?
There's free versions. And then there's the, like, premium versions, but honestly, you can get everything you'd want. So, like, for instance, we have a optical Trello. So whenever anyone buys glasses, buys contacts, they just tried contacts for the first time, we have preset templates that'll come up with the patient's, like, record number, basically, so we can easily track what's going on. Did we follow up with the patient? Did I follow up to schedule a follow up? You know?
Oh, yeah,
and
exactly.
Then I can tag one of our team members to follow up and do something, or send out the guide. We have a new soft lens handling guide. So we have a template for new soft lens wearers. And so as soon as I do that, I create that for that encounter. And then my staff will send them a message in 2 or 3 days, send them a message asking how things are going. So it's extremely helpful in managing many things.
Do you use it in your personal life too for home stuff as well?
Or just the office? Separate card.
It's all mixed.
I have a separate card. It's not mixed. They're all like you have to have rights to be able to get into each card. Yep. But I have a personal one. I have one for just Patrick and I of like trip planning. They call them cards. Yeah.
Oh, that's so cute. Yeah.
So trip planning. Sometimes we'll have that because maybe you have a rental car, hotels, this and that. Fun. Like projects, like we were doing it when we were renovating our house in the past. So
yeah,
it's cool. Fabulous. Highly recommended. All right. So as of November last year, according to studentloanplanner.com, the average optometrist has $267,000 of student loan debt on average. And according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median salary is $120,000 for an optometrist. That's from 2021, so maybe a little outdated. But this was the perfect stat to spark today's inspiration. And being in the season of New Year's resolutions, we are in this continued series of giving the gift of eye care New Year's resolution solutions. So this year's solution is focused on the theme of mostly financial management. And specifically today, we have recruited what we have titled our financial coach. Without further ado, we have Lauren Williams. She is a CFP and a student loan advisor at Student Loan Planner. We're welcoming back the Student Loan Planner team. Two of our top episodes in the past, most recently in 2020, was with our founder, Travis Hornsby, and Student Loan Planner has consulted with over $500,000 of student loan debt. But for Lauren specifically, I'm very excited to have a conversation with her. For everyone who doesn't know of her, which is too bad because she is a 4-time Olympian. She is a 3-time medalist, Olympic medalist. Yeah. So just a small accolades that most of you maybe.
Small accomplishments.
Exactly. Amazing accomplishments. She got her bachelor's in finance from University of Miami. She owns also a financial firm called the financial planning firm Worth. So wait, it's a financial planning firm called Worth Winning. And she's also the host of Worth Listening podcast. She's also on the CNBC Advisory Council and was named one of Investopedia's 100 top financial advisors of 2020. So welcome, Lauren, to our show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am super excited to be here to talk all things money and student loans today.
Yes, yes.
Who doesn't need help with that? Jeez.
44 million student loan borrowers. A lot of people need help with this.
Amen. It's just like such a stressful, I don't know, for me, I'm a couple years out now and maybe have like, I don't know, 70K-ish left in my student loans last time I looked. But it's something that I just like hated looking at every time. I remember just being so anxious about it at every step along the way of figuring out, even like in the beginning stages when I was taking out loans, in like how much I was taking out, because everyone says take out the minimum, but that's really stressful when you're living in a city like Berkeley, California, where everything's expensive. And then as I got into my, you know, fellowship and I was thinking, I got to start paying this back. Every time I started thinking about it, I thought, why am I going to pay someone when I'm already owing so much? I can figure this out. I'll just pay it. I'll just pay the minimum amount. And then once I got further along, I was like, I need to reconsolidate this and started doing that. I just feel like I made decisions without truly knowing what I was doing. And I was just like wanted it off my plate so bad. Yet it's this over, like, it's just this like black cloud that follows you around for years, I feel.
Yeah, what you're describing, Roya, is like debt fatigue. So many people are just like, debt is bad. I don't want to deal with this. Get it off my plate. But then they realize that, oh my goodness, this is like a bear to tackle. You might have the income to be able to ultimately pay it down, but the pay down strategy is really important if you are going to go the route of like, let's get this off my plate so I don't have to worry about it anymore. But there's a large group of people that actually won't even be able to afford to pay the loans down and also meet all their other financial goals. And as we talk at the beginning of the year about, like you said, setting resolutions and things like that, getting clarity around what is exactly your specific situation is incredibly important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It makes such a big difference. Well, before we go into that, I want to talk a little bit about your competitive background. Because, I mean, all these things, you ran track, then not only, so you ran track, you ran in the Olympics, you placed, and then you decided that wasn't enough, and you also competed in women's bobsled and placed second in Sochi. Amazing.
Lauren, I'm looking at your Wikipedia right now. I'm like blown away by this. Calgary, we actually had, we have like a bobsled at COP, so it's the Olympic Park here in Calgary, where there is competitive bobsledding. And at one point when I was finishing up my like small candle compared to your big flame in the Olympics, but playing university sports, I thought about trying it out sometime, because they actually have people down to do bobsledding at the park, kind of as like a novelty thing. And the speeds that those things get up to are just insane.
Yeah, Calgary is like the birthplace for me. It's where I got started with bobsled. That was the first camp I was able to attend. There's only three tracks. Yeah, there's only three tracks in North America. So Calgary, Park City, Utah, and then Lake Placid, New York. But I had quite a time in Calgary. Know it well.
That is so cool. So you do know, I would never have imagined that that is such a small, like sort of small community. That's really cool. So you know this city.
I do.
Do you feel like your competitive background, how did that like relate to getting into finance? I mean, I know you did, your bachelor's degree is in finance, but how did this morph for you? Like, how did you get into this profession from competing?
Yeah. So that story, long story short, is I was 20 years old. I became a professional athlete. I was making $250,000 as a 20-year-old. I come from a family that no one ever talked about money. No one earned a lot of money. We were very much paycheck to paycheck. And all I knew as a junior in college with a finance major was that I didn't know anything about money and I needed help. I hired a financial advisor. I didn't know at the time that there were different types of financial advisors. So I ended up in the hands of somebody who was basically a sales guy, earned a commission for selling me a bunch of products, and I didn't actually get a financial plan. So fired him, hired another guy, thought that was going to go better. It didn't. And so I was like, what do people do when they're trying to like organize their finances? Like, I'm willing to pay for help. I need to understand this stuff. Like, I don't know how to adult. I did a Google search to try to teach myself. Like, where do you get a certification or something? I literally did a Google search and found the CFP coursework, enrolled in it blindly, not realizing that it was like a whole industry and a whole big deal, and that, you know, passing the CFP exam is pretty much like passing the bar for being a lawyer. It's super hard. I just wanted answers for myself, and that morphed into, you know, me being able to help other people figure out their stuff.
How long is that program for you?
I think it was like a 9-month program, but it ended up being like over 2 years because I was still competing at the time. So, you know, there were periods on and off. So it's not a very long thing, but it is very intense.
Absolutely. I mean, okay, this is probably a stupid question, but when you get a bachelor's in finance, how much does that really help you for what you ended up doing in these extra certifications that you got? Like, do you feel like someone with a bachelor's in finance really knows how to financially plan?
Absolutely not. The good news, though, is that there is now a degree that is financial planning specific. So finance is very broad. Financial planning is very specific to what people are working with as it relates to their personal finances. So we have like these six pillars. It's investments, taxes, insurance, estate planning, cash flow, and I don't know which other one I'm missing, but basically it's all encompassing of the areas of personal finance, which is much better than just doing broad finance that could be pretty much anything.
Totally. Makes sense. Okay. So now you've gotten your financial planning certification. What is some of the things that you, I don't know, like, you know, when you're learning something, you're like, oh wow, light bulb. That makes so much sense. Like maybe like one or two simple things that you started that you can like, at, like core memories you had while during your training, you're like, gosh, why doesn't everyone do this?
I would say the one or two simple things is be consistent. You know, keep showing up even when you get kicked in the face. So from a track and field standpoint, some days you're going to have a really hard workout. It's going to suck. You're going to be sore the next day and you're not going to want to come back. But guess what? You do, because a lot of practices add up to good competitions. You know, those competitions add up to the opportunity for you to win the championship. And it's not different with your finances. Some days you're going to blow your budget. You're going to go out with your friends knowing good and well that you shouldn't have. You know, you still show up and you budget the next month or the next week or whatever your plan is. You don't just throw the whole thing out of the window because it didn't go well for you.
Don't abandon the mission.
Exactly.
I love that. I love that metaphor. I mean, it's kind of like even, you know, you have this huge burden of your loans, this obviously $267,000 our average loan. And it feels sometimes like you'll never pay it off. Or like maybe it's like someone who's overweight and they need to lose 100 pounds. They feel like I'm never going to lose it. So why would I even try? I don't know. Maybe is that a similar thing? It's like, am I ever going to be able to race track or run as fast as anyone else? No. So why try?
Yeah, people get discouraged. But like you said, it's all about having a plan. To your point, I looked up the last five optometrists that we served and the income was between 117 and 170. And so to your point, if there's $270,000 of student loan debt, you owe $100,000 more than what you earn. It can be completely daunting. The key piece of the puzzle, though, is understanding what is my specific plan. I can't do what my friend is doing. I can't do what my other competitor is doing as an athlete. I need to make a plan specific to me to help me win the race. And that's what's really key as you think about like your strategy going forward. Like, you can't just give up. You got to make a plan that is specific to what you're trying to accomplish.
I love that.
What are the first steps to start making a plan? So where would we start?
So as it pertains to student loans, I think the first thing you need to do is understand what exactly do I have as it relates to my loan. So right now we're in this period called the income-driven adjustment period, where it's almost a shoo-in for most people to consolidate their loans because it's going to give them extra credit toward an income-driven plan. So income-driven plans are 20 to 25 years long. And if you get on one after 20 or 25 years, whatever is left over is going to be forgiven. And that will be the situation for most optometrists. They're going to want to go for forgiveness. Now, if you're earning much more than what you owe, then you're going to be one of the people that needs to think about, well, should I be aggressive and get this off my plate and, you know, get this taken care of pretty quickly, or should I do this forgiveness thing that Lauren's talking about? But the first thing you need to know is like, what do I have and what do I need to do with what I have? Because there's some things you need to do to get into the various programs to make sure you're on the right track.
Yes. Well, it is kind of hard too, because like it's almost like finding a job and like saying, you know, I don't even know where I want to live, let alone what my job's going to be. And then making a plan, right? So you might make a plan that's an income-driven repayment plan, or maybe the PSL, the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Plan. And then you end up getting married and your partner makes a lot more. And so that no longer necessarily like maybe the income-driven repayment plan doesn't work anymore, right? You know, there's things that I've heard that those are times too that kind of mess up a plan that you have.
Because life changes.
Life changes, and you just need to be aware, because if you like getting married does affect some of these plans, right?
Absolutely. And it is the biggest shocker for so many people is like, oh my goodness, I got married. I did my regular recertification the way they told me to, and my payment just doubled. What the heck? I cannot afford this.
Yes.
Because people are working differently with their finances. Sometimes them and their spouses are not doing everything together as a household. It's like, these are your student loans. But when you get married, your finances do get married too, whether you think they're married or not. Separate accounts doesn't mean that your finances are not necessarily married. So those are some considerations. Doesn't mean don't get married. You can absolutely get married.
Right.
That's what we help people with, a student loan planner, is like, hey, do you want to get married? Do you want to, you know, maybe not get married? Do you want to do married filing separately? Like, there are options out there that exist for you depending on what your particular situation is. You just don't want to be caught off guard by that. You 100%. Absolutely need to know also, which payment plan am I going to be on? So we've got the save plan. We've got the income-based repayment plan. We've got the pay-as-you-earn plan. There used to be this revised pay-as-you-earn plan. It no longer exists. They all sound exactly the same. I'm sure you guys can see why I even have a job right now, because you're like, wait, what?
No, but it's true. It's confusing because it kind of sounds like they all But pay as you go and income based repayment, how is that any different?
Exactly. So the pay as you earn plan, you had to borrow exclusively after October 1st of 2007, and you pay on your loans over a period of 20 years. Whereas the income based repayment plan, you could have borrowed at any time, but you're going to pay over a period of 25 years and you're going to pay based on 15% of your income. Whereas if you had chosen the pay plan, you would pay based on 10% of your income. Well, if we're trying to get forgiveness, what you absolutely want to do is pay as little as humanly possible toward your loans so that you can maximize the amount that's being forgiven. And that's counterintuitive to so many people, because like you said, we see debt, we say pay debt, get it off our plate.
Yes.
They assign you $100 a month payment. You're like, oh, let me try to pay $200. Really what you're doing is throwing your money into a black hole, because if you actually need to pay $1,000 to be paying it off and you can't afford to pay $1,000, it makes more sense just to pay the $100. By paying $200, you're not really doing anything. You're not making a dent. So that's where we come in and help you strategize so that you're not throwing money away and you can use that money to something else that's going to better optimize your overall financial picture.
Love that.
Now, do you think that every student or every professional needs to have a planner? Like, would you say that it's probably going to benefit everybody? And at what point in the journey do people need to get a planner? Should it be, if we were recommending to somebody out there listening, should they be reaching out right after optometry school, during optometry school, you know, whenever? Is it ever too late to get a planner to come help?
Absolutely not. So as it pertains to student loans, I think every single person should work with a financial professional to figure out a plan for their student loans, because there are so many intricacies related to it. If you wanted to go the road on your own, you would need to do hours and hours of research. And it just doesn't seem like it'd be a worthwhile use of your time. Now, as it pertains to your overall finances, I would say also, I'm a big proponent of working with a financial professional, but there's different ways to work with a financial professional. And I think that's the thing that's off-putting for a lot of people. They think that you have to work with someone forever and ever. They've heard about the scams. They've heard about these investment advisors that are, you know, taking these big commissions and, you know, doing weird trading things on their account. So people are a little leery. I was as well. I told you, I had two crappy financial advisors before I decided to become one. But you absolutely
what makes somebody a bad advisor? Like, how, what question. Makes somebody a crappy one? How do you identify those ones and keep away from them?
Yeah, so for me, the three criteria that you should be looking at is fee-only, fiduciary, and certified financial planner. A certified financial planner is what we started by talking about. You're going to have a code of ethics you need to follow. There's an exam you have to pass, a certain amount of experience you're going to have, you know, and there's one more E, I forgot what it is, but there's four E's, and it's basically like being a physician. You have to do a certain amount of work to be qualified to call yourself this. There are other people. Like, both of you could wake up today and be like, I'm a financial coach, I'm a financial advisor, I'm a financial wealth manager, whatever you want to say. You cannot refer to yourself as a certified financial planner if you are not one. And we know that there's some criteria, and you can check that criteria. Fiduciary means that you need to do what is in the client's best interest, which it baffles me that we have people in the financial industry that are not held to a fiduciary standard. If they're not held to that, that means they just need to do what's suitable. So let me give you an example of what that means. Like, hey, Roya, here's $3 million of life insurance because you're alive and you might die and you have someone else in your life and, you know, you want to just take care of them. So it's suitable for me to give you that advice. But guess what? I'm earning the next 18 months of commissions for selling you $3 million of life insurance when you maybe only needed a million. That's the person that's not going to be a fiduciary. On the other hand, if I'm fiduciary, I've done some math. I've looked at your situation. I understand. Okay. You're married. You have this many children. Here's the worth of your house. Based on all these different things you need to pay off, I think you need $1.5 million of insurance. Okay. I'm not going to sell you three just because I can. I'm going to do what's in your best interest. So that's the difference between a fiduciary and a non-fiduciary. And then last but not least is that fee-only piece of the puzzle. That means they're going to be telling you clearly what they're charging you, whereas someone who is not fee-only is going to make it maybe even seem like their services are free. So you're going to get this at a lot of those big companies that you see on the television. They got a lot of commercials. You go in, the financial advisors, you know, that just opens up the accounts for you, puts the money in the investments, and you're like, okay, I'm investing, and that's it. Like, that advisor needs to make money, and they're not telling you how they're making money, and that's where it gets shady. So if you don't understand how the person is getting paid, everybody's got to make a living, everybody's got to pay rent or a mortgage or whatever, then you need to make sure, like, run away from that person.
Yep, makes sense.
Lauren, what do you think is better to have an advisor? Say if you bank with somebody, do you think it's best to have an advisor through the institution that you're doing your banking with? Or do you think it's better to have somebody outside of the bank as a second, kind of like another opinion or another flavor on the whole plan?
I would say someone outside of the bank. The majority of the people at the bank are also going to be charging those commissions, and they're going to be putting you in products related specifically to the bank. And like I said, there's not going to be a lot. There are some in banking that have the certified financial planning degree. So I don't want to say that there aren't mm-hmm. any, but the majority of them are going to have what we call a series license. So there's series 3, series 63, 67, series 7. Those are licenses related specifically to investments. They're not comprehensive related to your overall financial plan. So you go into your bank and you ask your advisor about student loans, and they're going to be like, what? I don't know. Just put more money in your Roth IRA. Here it is right here. They're going to be yeah. very focused on those investment accounts and not really focused on your whole like life picture.
Totally. I appreciate this because I've wondered this and I've heard the same thing from, you know, other advice, and it does kind of resonate because I guess if you think about it, same with like, I guess investments, advisors too. So, you know, it does, there are wonderful advisors at the bank. Don't get me wrong. You know, there's some very qualified, wonderful people that have helped me along the way that I really appreciate. There's also been times when I've sort of felt like, oh, is that the RESP or whatever it is that they're wanting me to put like money into, is that really the best investment for me? And I had the same advice, you know, regarding investments too in the past, to really seek an opinion that's outside of the institution that you're putting your money into. So that's
everyone has to make quotas, right? It's like you,
that's right. And it's understandable, right?
If they're doing multiple yeah. or if you're wearing multiple hats, it's hard to say yeah. that you're going to actually have someone's true best financial interest in mind.
Well, you can't avoid bias like that because you really, that's your institution, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
Exactly. One other thing I'll say too about this is that you don't have to work with somebody forever and ever. You can call someone, you can find someone that you can work with for an hour or an hour and a half and just say, hey, here's my situation. Here's the things that are top of mind for me. What do you think? We call that kind of like a one and done call where, you know, it's just planning advice in the moment. It gets rid of the conflict of interest because you may never talk to me again. I'm not selling you anything in that moment. You know, I'm just sure. giving you advice. Yeah. I'm not managing your assets. So don't feel like you have to work with somebody related to them holding onto your investment accounts or choosing your investments for you, or that even mm-hmm. you have to work with somebody and pay them monthly or quarterly. That is a typical way. And there are plenty, like I said, of advisors that are of high integrity that, you know, charge in that direction. But maybe you just want to try it out a little bit first and, you know, totally. Dip your toe in and see, like, what is it to work with a financial professional? What kind of questions can they ask or answer? And then they show their value to you. And then you decide you want to do something that's more comprehensive with them.
Well, yeah, that is kind of, I mean, I think about something as like marketing, for instance. Like, it's hard to truly, people are often scared to do things like marketing within their businesses because they're afraid that they're going to do it wrong, or, you know, it's an expensive investment and you don't really know if things are working until a couple months in. Like, you have to kind of plan for that. Do you feel like that's similar when it comes to financial planning, or can you sit down and kind of, you know, bang it all out in a session or two and then have a plan that you can play out on your own for a little bit? Or I don't know, feels like it'd be a longer stretch than that.
Yeah, it completely depends on what your particular situation is. Like you said, we are all going to be dealing with money day in and day out until the day we die. We are either going to have a lot of it, we're going to have a little bit of it, we are going to have to pay it to someone, we are going to have to save it. It's just an on and on, ever evolving cycle. You're going to have kids and you're going to have to save for them. You're going to have to pay for their college. You know, they're expensive in and of themselves. So as you think about it, it is a lifetime journey of dealing with your finances, and it's nice to have someone that you trust to go on that journey with. But it doesn't mean that you can't get maybe a one size fits all. So as an example, in my business, I do two 90 minute meetings with the person. And over the course of that, I build a plan for them and I kind of send them on their way. They may come back to me, or I may never see them again. They may say, like, okay, I feel educated enough to kind of handle this on my own. it generally depends on like when does the complexity come into your life? Like a single woman sure. who makes $100,000 a year is going to be completely different than a person that's married, has two kids, you know, maybe has a parent in the household because the parent didn't save for retirement. That's a whole different set of sure. expenses and a whole different way of thinking of how to make your money stretch. You might need a bigger home and you know, those sorts of things. So what's happening in sure. your life, I think, is the thing that makes you want to decide, like, what do I need for myself?
Absolutely. Well, aside from, you know, scheduling an appointment, what are some, is there a, like a basic financial course that you think every professional should consider aside from just hiring a financial professional? Because I do think sometimes, like sort of what I alluded to early on, is it feels like this very intimidating thing. And even just like knowing that I shouldn't just find a financial planner, I need to find a certified financial planner. Like, is there something out there that can like give people a little confidence in their decision making? Because it does. I feel like that fear is what keeps a lot of people from actually making an educated and a well thought through decision. Because it feels like I don't know where I'm going and I don't want to make the wrong decision, so I just won't decide at all.
Or it's just too overwhelming. So avoidance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I wish I had like an easy, like, yeah, just go to abc.org
and right.
they'll yeah. teach you everything you need to know. There's a lot of good people that are doing financial literacy and financial foundation sort of things nowadays. There's some, you know, online courses that you can take, but there's not any one particular place that I would send someone to start learning. I will tell you my one favorite resource right now is on, it's a YouTube channel. It's called Two Cents, T-W-O Cents, C-E-N-T-S.
Okay.
And they're really cool, cartoonish, but they're for adults. They're like 5-minute videos that yes. just kind of like give you baseline information. And like I said, it was originally, it's a PBS program. So, you know, PBS does a lot nice. Of, you know, legwork to make sure that the information is that's being disseminated is right. And they're not selling anything. They're just giving information. So
love that.
That would be one place on I would say notes. That's, yeah, great to start.
A good, cute starting point. Cartoonified starting point. I like that. Very unintimidating.
5-minute segments is easy to, you don't lose interest. Like, exactly. You just start to, so you get the message probably in a short amount of time. I love it.
Takeaway exactly. 2 cents
it's
worth.
Like, what do I need to think about before I buy a house? Or what is an ETF yes. that everybody's talking about? Like, what is a Roth IRA? Like, yeah, it's great much questions. Better to learn about that in 5 minutes versus, like you said, being sold that in a blog on a website from a banking company yes. that wants you to open a Roth IRA with them. Yeah.
Yes, 100%.
Speaking of 2 cents, okay, how much should we, like, what would be fair or to expect if you were to hire somebody for, like, an initial consult? What do you think the cost, like, should be? What do you charge roughly, if you don't mind me asking? Or what would you think the average might be?
Yeah, 100%.
Like so, a consult, like a session. Yeah.
A certified financial planner, you're going to be hard to find one that's going to be less than $250 per hour. On an ongoing basis, what you would find is usually $3,000 as a minimum over the course of a year. So if you're kind of like more of a beginner and, you know, trying to figure things out, you might pay somebody, which is basically $250 a month and turns out to be $3,000 a year. But if you're a higher earner, you know, I have some financial planning friends where their minimum is $10,000 a year before you to be a client there. You're going to be earning some big bucks if you can write a, you know, 10K check, and you're going to have some complexity related to that. But, sure. you know, like my current hourly rate is $320, and I started at like $150 because I didn't realize, like, everybody's like, no, that's not our minimum as CFPs. And I'm like, but people need help. And what if they can't afford it? And I just kept thinking about myself. Like, you know, it feels really expensive when you don't come from a background where, you know, spending a couple $100 in an hour is a normal thing. You're like, a couple $100 is totally. A lot of money. But then you start thinking about, if you change your mindset and you start thinking about, like, you know, how much could I save if I spend this $200 in this hour, if it could save me $20,000, which is like the thing I love most about working as student loan planner, is like literally it's a 60-minute consultation where we help you with your student loans, and we save people on average tens of thousands of dollars. You know, sometimes I'm able to finish a consultation, I'm like, I just saved this person $150,000 in 60 minutes. You yes. know, that's a $595 call. which is definitely not something that, you know, people are easy to just like, okay, let me write a check for that. Let me swipe my yes. credit card. You're like, oh my God, holy heck, this better be worth it. Yes. But we definitely, as we start the new year, need to be thinking about changing our mindset and saying, hey, what do I lose by not ever taking an hour of my time to see what I could learn that might change the game over, you know, the next 30 years of my life?
100%. It's like Patrick Allen said this in one of our last episodes, but it's like you have an ATM machine where you put in $550 and you get $10,000 back, but over time, right? Is it not like paid out right away, but it's your diffuse. Yeah, exactly. You have to be able to invest to help yourself out, because truly most of us don't have this knowledge, unfortunately. I was checking out your website for your company and I love the setup there. She has a financial checkup, kind of a question and answer, and you answer the questions and it basically gives you, assesses your symptoms, which I love, you know, we're in a healthcare, we love this. And it's, it tells you whether you need a wellness exam, if you need a sick visit, or if you're headed to the emergency room.
Oh no.
I know. So I need a sick visit, I've learned. I'm not dead. It says good news, you're not dead, but there's things
good
you
news,
can improve.
You're not dead.
I died. I loved it. But no, I really like that. And I saw also on your website one thing. You said that before you got your CFP, you were making some expensive mistakes. And I want to talk about, like, what are some expensive mistakes, some classic examples of some expensive mistakes?
Ooh, so I will say the first one is buying too much house. And a lot of people just did this during COVID. They got yes. really excited. You know, we were all trapped indoors. We were tired of living in apartments. Interest rates went down. And they took whatever they had to get the bare minimum down payment, you know, got a really awesome 2% interest rate, but now they got a big fat mortgage and they're struggling to pay it. Or they're covering the mortgage every month, but they're not able to save for retirement anymore. One of the biggest mistakes that I see young professionals making right now is buying too much house, because they feel like that's the next adult thing that you got to do, or I'm just tired yes. of, you know, being in this apartment, or I'm tired of renting. Everybody says throwing your money away on rent.
Yes.
You know, what is right for you is right for you is the most important thing. You may love to travel, which is my particular situation. I've been to 57 countries. I'd much rather have an itty bitty house or to rent a place than to not be able to travel. So before you go and jump off the ledge and buy, like I said, one, too much house, or two, buy a house and you don't even really want or need a house, just doing it because everybody yes. else is doing it. I want you to think about that. And I was definitely the person that did that. So I'm speaking from experience. bought a house in 2004, turned around and bought another house in 2006 because I felt like I needed a bigger house. Right. And we all know what happened shortly after, basically like 2007, my house was worth nothing. No. And then I held on to it. I held on to it until I think it was 2017. I'm not sure exactly what year. It was well after, you know, 2008. We're 10 years down the road. Let's say 2018-ish. It still hadn't recovered in price. I bought at the very top of the market.
Oh, yeah.
So I ended up selling a house short. Yeah. It was awful, you know, to say, like, I paid, I think it was $800,000, and I ended up selling it for $600,000 12 years later. I couldn't even get my money back.
Hurts.
Yeah. Big,
that
bad,
means you rented
nasty,
for $200,000.
Mistake.
Right.
I
mean,
exactly.
The one thing, like, for the house topic, I mean, people, whether it's a goal or maybe they're living small or, you know, whatever, or they do feel like they're throwing their money away on rent, like, what is the happy medium? Like, how do you figure out? I know you can go to the bank and they'll say, oh, you are pre-approved for $800,000 or $500,000, whatever it is. But how is there a financially sound way of figuring out the budget for what you should spend? You know, like, no more than what you're renting already. Like, I think that's another thing, is like figuring out what percentage of your budget should go toward what.
There it is, the big bad B word. That is exactly what you need to be thinking about. If you don't have a budget, you shouldn't be buying a house. If you haven't looked at your monthly expenses to say, like, what do I actually have coming in and what's going out? And what am I doing on a regular yes. basis above and beyond just saying that I want a house or I want to save for a down payment? You have to understand what your expenses look like. 30% of my income is going to, you know, going outside to play. 20% of my income is going to savings. 50% of my income is going to just keep keeping a roof over my head and keeping, like, you know, the basic bills met. You know, they call it the 50-30-20 rule. I just kind of threw it out there. But if you don't know what your percentages are, you don't know what your spending is like. And so, you know, to that point, what should your mortgage look like? They say not more than 30% of your gross income. But that even can be aggressive sometimes. Like I said, depending on what else you have going on, daycare is the thing that throws that off. Like, it's not optional. Yeah. You've got to go to work and your kids have to be taken care of. But I've seen daycare expenses at $1,300 per child. That's a huge dent in your finances for a period of time. Exactly. So you really need to be thinking about what your budget is and what you're able to afford. And then also, like, what are your goals? So once again, do not do any one thing in a silo. Your student loan plan is just one piece of your finances. Your home buying, one piece of your finances, your retirements, your investments, your taxes, all of those things work together. So I would say the one thing you should do before you buy a house is talk to a financial professional about, like, hey, I want to retire in 30 years. I want to make sure I pay for my kids' education. Mm-hmm. And I really, really, really want to buy a house, which is the main reason I'm coming to you. Like, what does it look like for me to be able to juggle these goals? And work through that with somebody to be able to say, like, okay, I should be able to afford this. Or maybe I'm approved for $800,000, but I only need to buy $400,000 so that I can do all the other things I wanted to do.
Totally.
Do you know of any, like, cool, like, apps for budgeting and things like that that are really easy to use, easy to access?
Ooh, my favorite budgeting app is called You Need a Budget. It's YNAB for short. They've got lots of cool little videos. It was a game changer for me organizing my own finances. I found it at the beginning of, like, I was doing the CFP coursework. It's not related specifically to the CFP. It was just, like I said, I was just trying to get my life together and I stumbled upon it and I have not looked back. It is awesome because I know where every dollar is going, what I spent from one year to the next, you know, on food, on this or that. It does all the averages for you. Yes.
Cool. Love that.
I know you're going to put it in the notes.
I thought that was
anyways,
a joke.
But...
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to put it in there, but I thought you were joking. Like, you need a budget.
Somebody should make that app. 2 cents and you need a budget. These are great, catchy names, and it sounds like they're awesome resources.
Love this.
Yeah.
Okay, so expensive mistake. Don't buy a house unless you can buy a house. What about anything else?
Don't be scammed. Easier said than done, right. But it's generally like, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Everybody is out looking for get rich quick schemes. And the real truth of the matter is, like, no one gets rich overnight. You need to do the long and slow and steady, the tortoise that wins the race strategy. And we all live in this right now kind of world where it's like, you know, you Uber it and it shows up. You Amazon it, it pops up. Whatever, you click a button and whatever you want is at your doorstep. And we think that we can do the same thing with our finances. And there's so much social media influence now that is saying, hey, just buy my $7 course and you too can be rich overnight. You too will never have to pay taxes again. And it's like, what? Like, that's
invest
not
in
real.
Dogecoin. Invest in Dogecoin. Right? I know. We do want to get rich quick. Why can't we? It's just like, can't we just go dig up our backyard and find gold or something? That'd be great.
But we can all absolutely be rich just by doing the basics. It's like, don't skip the first step. Put XYZ number of dollars in the savings every month, you know? Okay, my emergency fund is done. Change that XYZ dollars over into your investment account. It does work. Slow and steady gets money into the bank. Absolutely does every single time. We just don't feel like it's working fast enough. And then we look down the road and we're like, oh, I spent $50 this month on this course. I spent $50 next month on something else that I thought was going to go well. I threw it $50 out the window. It's like, if you had just put $50 away every single month without fail, you would have been in great shape.
Totally.
Like, it's one of those things where you just got to do the regular, normal, boring, vanilla thing to win.
Yeah. I love that.
It's like a habit, right?
Exactly.
I love that. Well, let's talk about some goals that people could have for 2024 in finance. So be vanilla in your finance. That's what I'm hearing.
Be vanilla is a good goal. I think, you know, we've had enough drama over the last few years. All having COVID round 1, 2, 3. I don't even know what round we're on. But, like, let's just be vanilla in 2024. Let's automate our savings. That's a really easy, low-hanging thing to do. If you've not been able to automate it, it's probably because you don't have a budget. You don't trust your bank account to be able to automate because you haven't organized your finances and you have some, erratic spending. So get a hold of what it is that you have coming in and going out, and especially your debt. So yep. Student loan debt, once again, that is, the payments are back. They are coming on. It is real. The 3 years of COVID pause is over. Make sure that you understand how that's going to impact your finances. But any other debt that you have as well, credit cards, how am I going to get these off my plate? One thing that I definitely want to drive home is that on any credit card, you need to pay your balance in full every single month.
Yep.
Oh, am I sure?
Yep. Amen to that.
So many people think that you do not need to pay your credit card balance in full and that it's going to somehow build your credit. They're like, hey, I'm just going to pay a little bit of it because I'm trying to build my credit up. As long as I'm paying at least the minimum or a little bit more than the minimum, I'm building my credit. And it's like, just because you don't have a bad credit score when you're doing that doesn't mean that that's the right thing to do. The best thing you can do for right. you if you have a credit card is to pay it in full every month. It sounds very elementary, but you would be surprised the number of people that have come to me and are running a balance and they don't actually have to be running a balance.
100%. I think that I remember hearing a friend of mine, she was like, I don't have any credit cards because they're really bad for you. And I was thinking like, that's crazy. I treat my credit card like my debit card. Like I just pay the whole thing off, even if it hurts, because I don't want that 16% or whatever it is interest bill. Like nothing else in most people's finances grow at 16.5% or more percentage. Nothing, right?
Nothing does. Exactly. And you got a good interest rate if you're at the 16%, because I see 30% all the time as a normal interest rate.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yeah. No. No way. Okay. So
why give your money to the credit card companies? They're rich already.
Right. They already have it down. They got this. Okay. I love this. So how do people get in touch with you if they want more personalized advice?
Absolutely. So studentloanplanner.com to get your finances organized related to student loans. We do 60-minute consultations where we help you figure out what a specific plan is that you need related to your student loan. So don't walk into 2024. Payments are back on, as I mentioned, without knowing and understanding what your plan is for student loan debt. And for myself, worth-winning.com, like you said, I highly recommend taking that financial checkup because it'll cut the light bulb on to what are some of the areas of finance that I need to be thinking about. What am I not thinking about related to my finances? Everybody's thinking about investing. Everybody's thinking about, you know, what are interest rates for high yield savings accounts? But what are you not thinking about? That's the reason I made the financial checkup list, to kind of yes. cut the light bulb on and say, hey, here's some other things of your finances that you could be optimizing.
Love that.
Well, thank you so much for all of this. This has been a wonderful pack of information that I'm sure everybody can really, it's good reminders, new things. We really loved having you on the show tonight or today or whatever time of day it is that you're listening to this. And we hope we can maybe even have you back again. Maybe we'll talk more about sports, maybe a little bit more about money. It sounds like the discipline you've carried through from your athletics has really moved you forward in the realm of finance. And so we really thank you for everything you've shared.
I love being able to help people organize their finances. So I thank you so much for having me on the show today. And I hope that somebody took just one little nugget away that's going to help them better themselves this year as they get their finances organized.
Love it. Thank you so much, Lauren.
Well, we've come to the end for today. We want to hear from you, so reach out to us with your feedback, questions, stories, things you are interested in hearing from us either through our Instagram or Facebook. And we can't close today's show without saying thanks to Valley Contacts for both making great products and for being amazing people to work with. Be sure to tune in and listen to our next episodes. But until then, try not to blink.